is the member of provincial parliament for Hastings, Lennox, and Addington. He has a giant riding, which includes Thurlow here in Belleville and all the way up north and then to Napanee and that whole chunk of land. And Rick Brzee joins us in studio right now. Good morning, MPP Brzee.
Good morning, Lauren. How are you doing today?
Notice how everything's light when there's not a huge crisis going on here.
Oh, and you didn't bring Todd in this time, so that's right. Figured you must want to talk to me for a change.
Yeah, no, it's great to talk to you. And, you know, one thing that I love, like when we have Smitty on, it's great because he's a minister. We can talk energy. He sits at the cabinet table with the premier, and that's one thing. You are focused in. And this is what I love. You know, everybody says, oh, do you want to be a cabinet? And maybe you want to be a cabinet minister one day. But the down and dirty work of just helping the riding and your constituents and getting the work done on a provincial level, which is, let's face it, healthcare, education, infrastructure, and the huge riding you have, there's an enormous amount of work for you to do on a basis every day.
It's a huge riding. It's a wonderful riding. People don't realize it's 9,300 square kilometers.
Wow, that's
more than
crazy.
One and a half times the size of PEI.
Really?
Yeah, it's huge. And I do a lot of driving.
Yeah.
Thank God for Bluetooth these days. I can actually make my phone calls while I'm driving.
Well, I hope, you know, obviously the province pays you some mileage. Please don't begrudge the MPP for putting down some mileage, because that's hard on anybody, any car, any pocketbook, right?
I'll be honest. I was really impressed the other day. I drive a 2015 Chrysler 200.
Okay.
It's a half a step above a K car.
It's a four-cylinder, right?
Yeah. Right. I was get down to 5.7 liters per 100K.
That's amazing.
After 240,000 clicks, that car's still putting it out for me. I'm so impressed.
That's crazy. That's what I was getting. I got that once on a trip to Florida, but I had a Volkswagen diesel.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
This is getting great gas mileage.
Yeah.
I do recognize that it's not going to last too much longer. I'm likely going to go to a hybrid. But for now, getting 5.7 was just awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm cheap, so.
One of the interesting things about your riding is that, you know, when we talk to Todd, I would say that we all live in the Quinte region, right? So I enjoy going to the county, and I go to Quinte West all the time. And so the Bay of Quinte riding is where I live.
Yeah.
Right? But if you live in Napanee, you probably don't go up to Bancroft on a regular. I mean, you might sometimes if you've a car, but it's not a, hey, let's go for dinner in Bancroft kind of thing. But for you, that's something you have to deal with. And the issues that they're having there are 100% different, perhaps, on what's going on in the southern part of the riding.
And it even goes beyond Bancroft, in up to Maynooth and like St. Peter and that whole area. Yeah, and what's going on there compared to what's going on in Amherstview or Odessa or Thurlow Township,
yeah,
is all very, I know it's not called Thurlow anymore, but.
Yeah. Well, it's Thurlow Ward. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have to keep on all those files and your staff must be amazing.
And I have the best staff on the planet, I swear. I've got offices in Madoc and in Napanee. I've got a total of six people working for me, including my legislative assistant. So, you know, they do a great job, and they tell me where to go.
Are you jealous of some of the MPPs at Queen's Park who have five square blocks in Toronto as they're riding?
Let me tell you, I was chatting with Dave Smith, who's the MPP for Peterborough.
Okay.
He lives on a 10-acre lot with himself, his partner, and one kid. Three people on 10 acres. This riding of Toronto Centre, which is where my apartment in Toronto is, is a total of 7.5 acres. Has over 100,000 people in it.
Isn't that wild?
It's just a completely different world.
Yeah, and that little chunk of land has as many issues, I'm sure, as Peterborough does, right?
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
Honestly, people keep on asking me how I like living in Toronto. I don't live there. I show up on Sunday night at about 10, 11 o'clock at night. I park my car. I walk back and forth to the legislature Monday through Thursday. And Thursday night, the best view of Toronto is the one in my rearview mirror.
Rearview mirror. Of course, that is the capital of Ontario. That's where that's where quote unquote stuff happens, right?
It is. And that's where I've got to do a lot of my job. But another big portion of my job is right here in the riding. And that's why I do so many kilometers like we were talking about.
Now, you have another title. What else is your, for people who don't know?
I'm also the parliamentary assistant to the Minister of Natural Resources and Forestry.
Which is great because let's face it, you see a lot of log trucks coming down Highway 62. So.
There's all kinds of forestry in this area. There's also a fair bit of mining still going on in this area, and we deal with hunting and fishing. We deal with the invasive species. That ministry covers a lot of things.
So was that something that you knew anything about before you got that role?
20 years ago, actually, through my municipal work, I was the chair of a conservation authority at the time. So I had gotten involved in some of that work, and the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry is the oversight ministry for conservation authorities. So again, I was aware of a lot of that work going on beforehand, certainly.
So very interesting stuff, right? And especially up north with the wind damage that was caused and...
The derecho was absolutely... And you can still drive through and see just the areas that are... It's matchsticks lying down in the fields. One of the ones that really got me was, as you drive through in most of these backcountry roads in the summertime, you're used to this beautiful canopy of trees mm-hmm. over top. It's almost like driving down a tunnel. And then you come to spaces that are just flattened and wide open, bright sun. It's scary to see what that damage has done.
So what about the concern for... I know the mayor of Tweed is quite concerned about blockage of waterways and things like that and getting in there and stopping that from causing flooding and things like that.
Absolutely. And one of the things, late last year, of course, we weren't expecting a derecho. Nobody was expecting a derecho. And so there was no budgeted allocation for that. But late last year, we found $5.5 million in the MNRF budget to distribute across the municipalities in that area, the ones that were hit the hardest by that. So we put the money out to the municipalities, and the municipalities chose how to best deal with that in their own area because everybody was hit a little differently. That's one of the things that, again, you talk about the size of my riding. I also have 18 different lower-tier municipalities to work with. That's the background I came from, was the municipal government, so I work well with them. I certainly understand the challenges that they're facing.
What are some of the challenges? And by the way, we'll take a few calls if anybody wants to speak with MPP Brzee, 613-969-1545, 1-866-969-1546. And we should tell everybody that you can speak to him in person at the Jerry Masterson Center in Thurlow, right?
Tomorrow afternoon, 4 till 6, we're meeting up at the community center there on Harmony Road. And again, a big part of my job is getting out to meet with people. We're doing public skating sponsorships all across the riding over the March break. We decided to do the one in Thurlow tomorrow afternoon. So I hope everybody can come out and chat with me.
What do people say to you when they meet you? Everybody has individual problems. And, you know, affordability is always one of the big ones. But what are people actually saying to you when you come face to face with them?
You hit the first one for sure. Affordability is the highest priority. Tagged with that is a lack of housing and a lack of available housing, or the cost of housing, which kind of goes hand in hand. The other side of it is healthcare. I'm speaking right now with a lot of the healthcare professionals in the area and trying to figure out, again, the local solutions that we can come to. One of the ones, I was just 2 weeks ago, I was up in Bancroft to... there was some trillion funding that was made available to a local fitness club. But what I didn't realize was that fitness club was actually started by a local physician and the Bancroft Family Health Team, because she was understanding that as she was working with, you know, patients that had cardio problems or things of that nature, medications and surgeries and all of that stuff that she was working with them could only go so far. She needed to get them exercising. Mm-hmm,
to move.
And that way, they, by having a fitness center right attached to the family health team, they could put physiotherapists in the place. They could work with the patients to build up their strength beyond what medicine could do. And so I love the combination and the innovation that's taking place up there and individually. I mean, the people on the ground know what they're doing and what we as a province just need to learn how to work with them and make sure that they're well supplied.
Of course, there's 10,000 doctors in this, or sorry, we wish. There's 10,000 people here who require primary care provider. That should be the number one goal of your government.
And well, that and housing is the number one goal of our government, and we're continuing to put more and more money into the healthcare system, certainly, and we're doing more announcements.
But is it a money thing? Like, is it a money thing? I mean, the idea that, you know, I think with healthcare, that's one of those things you could throw a gazillion dollars in it, and it's not going to... The problem is that a lot of people, you know, let's face it, there is... It's a multi-issue problem, but there's a lot of new physicians who don't want to come to rural areas. Number two, there's a lot of people who are qualified physicians, even Canadians who got their medical license outside Canada in places like Australia or South Africa or Ireland and England because there's no spaces here. And then we don't license them to come home. These are crazy things.
Absolutely. And there's some things that we can deal directly and have done directly. I mean, one of the ones very early on, the minister made a mandate such that anyone who is currently licensed in Canada can come to Ontario automatically and start functioning as a physician, and only then do they have to go through the registration process with the local process.
But that alone, you would assume would already be... Like, so you live in Vancouver, and you work at the children's hospital there, and you want to come and be a pediatrician in Ontario, but... You might not be. Of course, you're qualified. It's common sense.
But it's a little bit like you have a driver's license that says you can drive in Ontario.
Right.
If you move to Alberta, you've got to go get an Alberta driver's license.
But I can drive with my Ontario license in Ontario.
And that's what we actually arranged was so that they can practice while they're getting their Ontario medical license.
But some guy who is or some person who is from Kingston who goes to Dublin, goes to Trinity College, gets a great thing and then can't get their license to practice here is insanity.
And again, we're working with the College of Physicians and Surgeons to try to expedite that, try to get it because it is a self-regulated college that manages those credentialing processes. So we got to get those to work faster. That, the nurses, all the different healthcare services. And we've got to be innovative with our models. And I was mentioning the one in Bancroft because I love that particular one.
Great idea.
And there's a whole new range of medical services that are being developed and being funded. And this is where, no, you're absolutely right that money is not the silver bullet. But money goes along with
some
of these.
I think innovation is the silver bullet. And also understanding that a lot of, you know, such a small percentage of the population uses the majority of our healthcare system. Yeah. Having said that, somebody who might be 25 has a different way of looking at it than somebody who's 75. So a 75-year-old demands to see a doctor even if they have a cough. 25-year-old just needs to see a medical professional and says, you know what? I've taken a look at you. I've seen 20 other people like you in the past week. You have this. Take this.
And let's face it, I don't know about most of you, but, you know, when I was 25, I just didn't go.
That's true.
That's 25 true. To 40, I don't think I visited a doctor more than a couple times, and I think that's a fairly common statement. But as you say, our population is getting older very, very quickly, right? Our population is growing very quickly. People think that all of a sudden we have less doctors or less healthcare. We actually have more than we've ever had before. We're just not being able to grow it fast enough.
But the other thing is that when we were young, our family physician had 8,000 patients, right? New doctors who come out take 1,500, 2,000 patients at the most and do other things. They work in the hospital. They do something else. So sometimes you need three or four physicians to take the place of where one family doctor was before.
And this is where we're building these family health teams. And that's one of the goals is that it can have two or three physicians, but also have the nurse practitioners, which is an amazing, I'll say, relatively new model for care. They can do some great work. We need all of that. The physiotherapists, the respiratory therapists, the psychologists and counselors, they can all be part of that team and provide a better level of care with, I'll say, less one-on-one with an individual physician, possibly.
Well, so most of the time, you don't need to see a physician, right?
Exactly.
You just need somebody who knows you. And if that team knows you, right? So say you're having some anxiety. you see your physician and it's like, listen, Rick, I understand you're a politician. I bet you you're anxious. why don't you speak to our counselor and they'll give you some tools to deal with that, right? That's how it should all happen, as opposed to where somebody gets to the point where they're at a level that they require meds or they get much worse. I mean, preventative care is always the best.
Absolutely. And one of the areas of focus is certainly mental health and addictions. We created a whole minister for mental health and addictions, and we are getting some benefit to it in this area directly. We've had some conversations with Minister Tobola here in Belleville, up in Bancroft. There's some good work going on there. So in all of them, in mental health, in chronic care, we know that this area is older and has more chronic illness than even in downtown Toronto and places
really
like
bad.
That.
Yeah.
So we need to work towards providing those services. And as you say, they don't always have to be a physician. It does need to be tagged into that family, that team approach.
Of course, people here are talking every day about homelessness and mental health. Okay. And you are not the MPP for Belleville. You're not the MPP for the Bridge Street United Church. No. But you clearly know about the issues that are going on. And in your communities, those are still issues. You are the MPP for Belleville, just the northern part of Belleville.
Exactly.
So this falls on
all of us.
Yes, it really does.
Absolutely. And again, we're working towards it. We just got over the winter, we got a new warming center up in Bancroft. One of the things that is kind of, I'll say, I won't call it a new trend, but a new concern. We used to see homelessness in the big cities, in the Ottawas and Torontos and places like that. We're now seeing homelessness on the street.
In Bancroft,
in Napanee, in all of our small communities. And then we are now aware of what we call the hidden homelessness. The people that are couch surfing, the teenagers that are just kind of floating from place to place. We need to get an overall better structure and better system. And part of that is getting more housing as a whole, right? Because one of the challenges is that housing is so expensive mm-hmm. that people can't afford it.
But,
I've got a 30-year-old son who's making,
good money,
decent money. He's still got a roommate because he can't afford his own place.
It's outrageous. I worry about my daughter who's going to graduate and probably get a decent job, God willing.
We hope.
And it's going to be a long time before she will be able to afford a house is a pipe dream. It's a huge issue. But before any of that happens, my goodness, Rick, somebody who's addicted to fentanyl and is dropping and having an OD once a month, they don't need a house. They need medical care and treatment.
Absolutely. And I always want to say at this point that homelessness and addictions and mental health are two different things, but you're absolutely right that they overlap considerably. And we, when we have someone that's facing that type of acute addiction challenge, we need medical intervention is the first step.
Chief of police here wants to build a detox center here in Belleville.
Absolutely.
Are you for something like that?
I would absolutely support something like that. We need to work with the municipality, the local emergency services, the paramedics who got absolutely overwhelmed. And I'll take a moment to say thank you to the paramedics and the first line officers who dealt with all of that extreme on that particular day, but are doing that every day.
It's
absolutely every day. They're the ones that run in when we run out, and we got to thank them for doing that. Absolutely.
9:28. We'll take a quick break. Okay. We'll get to some phone calls. I hope that all this comes into fruition. It's wonderful to talk about it, but we need to all work together to make it happen.
Absolutely.
We'll take a break. Rick Brzee, MPP, Hastings, Lennox, and Annington is in studio with us.
Attention farmers, selling Tuesday, March 19th at Horde Station Sale Barn. 35 top-end Charlet cows, 20 with calves aside, plus one Charlet bull. A longtime reputation herd property of the late Rayburn Robinson of Madoc. Bidding opens at 1 p.m. Tuesday, March 19th at Horde Station Sale Barn, Campbellford. For more information, contact Dave DeNure, 705-653-3660, or Brad DeNure, 705-653-8763.
When I say one, two, you say three. 4, 1, 2, 3! Empire Rock Fest is back July 18th to 20th at Empire Square. On night three, Saturday, July 20th, Rock Fest gives you Canadian icon Alan Doyle. And Empire favorite Matt Anderson and the Big Bottle of Joy.
Let me tell you what's on my mind.
Plus special guests, Dead Root Revival. It's a down-home kitchen party for all ages. July 20th, Greater Shine at Empire Square.
All together gone. It's now or never if you want another song.
Empire Rock Fest, three nights of variety, July 18th to 20th at Empire Square, downtown Belleville. Get your tickets now. Call 969-0099 or online at theempiretheater.com.
When your furnace starts up and sounds like this, it's time to call Home Air Care. Or if your furnace is on, but your family says,
Mom, it's freezing in here.
It's time to call Home Air Care. Trusted in our community by homeowners like you since 1981. Home Air Care Heating and Air Conditioning is ready to help get you and your family warm and cozy again. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Feel right at home with Home Air Care.
Google Home Air Care today and let the pros in the green trucks save you big bucks.
When my child was killed by an impaired driver, I was just devastated. There were days I couldn't even get out of bed. I couldn't cope with day-to-day living, let alone deal with the legal issues of the crash, too. So I called MAD Canada.
At MAD Canada, we're trained to guide survivors through the legal challenges. We're here to support them in their grief. If you or someone you love needs help, call us at 1-800-665-MAD. Because at MAD Canada, every victim matters.
There are many peculiar words in the English language. Words like salivigant, peregrinate, nemophilus, peripatetic, and conviviality. Yet, there is no word for getting the most out of winter in your Subaru, thanks to symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive and X-Mode. Until now. We call it unhibernate, as in while your neighbors stay home, you'll be unhibernating all winter in your Subaru. Welcome to Uncommon Winter Confidence.
See Bay Subaru on Millennium Parkway, Belleville, or visit baysubaru.com.
Hi, this is Mary Thomas, inviting you to join me each Sunday for conversations with people around the Quinte area, across Canada, and maybe even around the world. We talk about things you're curious about, things that annoy you, and things that matter in your life. Join me for Newsmaker Sunday, each Sunday at the noon hour on 800 CJBQ.
I think we need to talk. The Lauren Brooker Show on 800 CJBQ.
Can it be knocking at my door? Well, it's election time. It is MPP Rick Brzee handing me a pamphlet.
How you doing, Lauren?
I'm doing
well.
No
pamphlets today. I didn't bring anything.
Rick is having an open house at the Jerry Masterson Center in Thurlow tomorrow.
Tomorrow afternoon, 4 till 6. I hope everybody can come out and chat with me.
And bring your questions and ask them politely, even if you're upset with something. And I know you're going to write things down and try to get people an answer. This is the whole point.
That's the whole point, is to get in front of people, have the conversations. In so many cases, there's always confusion. We have three different levels of government and
sure,
different departments and all of that stuff. So to try to help through that, there are people that are having trouble negotiating some of the or navigating some of the stuff within the provincial government, and we can absolutely help with that. And then there's the people who want to talk about the policies and the directions that the government goes. Of course, I'm one member of 82 members in the government caucus, but I listen to you guys and carry that voice to Queen's Park so that we can try to have that level of influence.
If you get 50 people saying the same thing at a caucus meeting, do you actually bring it up?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, we bring it up. And we have those conversations in caucus. Of course, caucus conversations are private.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've seen instances where we started out in one direction, we had the caucus conversation, and the direction changed. And I'm not going to get into specifics,
sure,
on that because it is confidential, but you've seen some of those changes as they hit headlines.
Well, I imagine that the green belt was one of those changes.
No comment.
Okay. Let's go to Doty in Wellington. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're on CJBQ. Yeah, you're on with Rick Brzee.
Good morning.
Good morning. Rick, I am not from your riding, but my husband resides in your riding.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what is or can be done to do something about the lack of transportation for a nursing home in Deseronto, in that area.
Transit systems for small municipalities have been a challenge for years. I certainly fought with them when I was a municipal politician, and we need to continue to support them. There is some funding windows available for these operations, and of course, one of the biggest ones is the share of the gas tax that comes to municipalities to help fund them. The programs themselves are run by the municipalities, and there's a really innovative one that runs from Belleville through Deseronto over to Napanee. I'm glad to see that. We need more, certainly, and we're working. I mean, there's one up in Bancroft that has started, the Bancroft Community Transit System. So it's good to see these programs going, but we definitely need more. You're right.
All right, Dodie, thank you so much for the call. Rick, good morning. You're on CJBQ. We're doing well.
Interesting, Rick. Forest fighting season. This is big. I was talking to somebody back north, and she says that her father works for a fire department.
Rick, can you step away from the just pull your mouth away from the receiver. You're breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, so I was talking to a lady back for the firefighting back in Medoc, and she says her dad is already getting prepared for our heavy fire season. Now, we have sometimes divert our forces to fight these fires, and our aircraft, as long as we talk about aircraft, is aging to fight fires, but forest fire season is changing to climate change, and I heard that debris between trees, if that's what happens, causes kindling, causes more fires. But we're in a different world, climate change. What do you think about that? Now we got no rain, and it's really going to be bad.
Okay, so I think, and I'm sorry, Rick, you are breaking up a bit today, so I'm going to let you go, but forest fire season this year.
Forest fire season is coming, and he's absolutely right in that we are looking at one that could be very intense. Last year, not so much in Ontario, but across the country, we had an incredibly intense forest fire season. One of the things that I'm very proud of, as mentioned before, I am the parliamentary assistant to the Minister of Natural Resources, and the ministry manages the forest rangers, the fire rangers, as we call them, that work in Ontario and work around the world. We are internationally recognized as one of the best fire services. We have had increase in our investments in the aviation, the planes that drop water and other foams, et cetera. We continue to work to improve that system, and I'm looking forward to, unfortunately, a concerning season, certainly, but I'm very grateful that we have such amazing firefighters that they take care of these things for us. Right? On that point, local municipalities in southern Ontario have arrangements and agreements in place with MNRF to share those responsibilities. Obviously, the local municipalities have fire services, and we're very grateful for them. And we work together, and we coordinate together with them and the Natural Resources and Forestry's fire rangers. So I think it'll be, I think we've got it covered. We're continuing to increase that investment.
Let's talk a little bit about affordability, as your federal counterpart calls April 1st April Fool's Day. But there's going to be a big raise in the carbon tax unless the Prime Minister decides to change his mind. Everybody's upset about this except the federal Liberal government. And so obviously your government is. But a 23% increase, the Liberals will say, hey, well, you're going to get a big check. And it's going to pay for it. Your thoughts during this affordability crisis?
First of all, on that big check that we're supposedly getting, the federal parliamentary budget officer has calculated that most people are actually getting less back than they are putting into the system. And they don't really calculate the continued growing expense. For every extra dollar in gasoline or fuel, that changes the price of the trucks that are transporting your groceries to the grocery store. That changes the price for the fertilizer that have to go on to grow your food. All of this is causing everything to go up.
We do a bit called the Butter Report,
yeah,
where we talk about the price of things. I mean, it's kind of a joke, but people actually listen to it to get the deals. And I was walking through the grocery store the other day, and you know the Highliner frozen fish or whatever?
Yeah.
At No Frills was $13 a box. It used to be $7.99.
Yeah.
It's
scary how much prices are going up, and there's a lot of conversations about what the causes are, whether it's the grocers, whether most of which, unfortunately, is federal. And there's not a whole lot we can do at the provincial level, but we are doing what we can. The number one, and I think the most relevant, is 10.7 cents off the price of gas from what we have always charged as a gas tax, right? And we're continuing that. We've continued it to the end of the year now. We are also having a budget come up at the end of this month, so I'm hopeful that we see some even more.
Any treats in there for us?
Low-hanging
fruit you want to talk about here? Break it on the program, no? All right. Well, we don't want to get you in trouble. Allison Brighton, good morning.
Yes, good morning. You're talking about the health care here in Ontario. I come from Saskatchewan, and this time in 1965, 64, I was pregnant with my daughter, and I had a British doctor who did not have privileges in the hospital in Saskatoon, and I was turned over to another one that did. But we had a clinic there that had everything in there, even a psychiatrist. So why are we so far behind here?
There have been, and there are facilities like that and teams like that in Ontario, and we're building more and more. But there's been a long time reliance on, I'll say, that individual family doctor that was the standard model, especially in the more rural, the smaller communities. So expanding those services to have more of the specialties, but also have more of the availability. As Lauren said earlier, some of those family doctors used to work like 80, 90 hours a week.
Yes, and they used to make house calls.
And exactly. And the current generation is not willing to do that, and I don't blame them.
But I will interrupt, though. Dr. Garch or Dr. J does still make house calls to people.
She's
amazing. But,
absolutely amazing services, absolutely.
The doctors have too much paperwork to do now, about 19 hours a month or something.
19 hours a week, I think, is what it is.
Okay.
It's a tremendous amount of paperwork, certainly.
Yeah,
unfortunately, there's ongoing conversations between the ministry and the OMA, and I know I had a conversation with one physician at one of our small-town clinics, and I asked him, you know, what paperwork can we pull from him? How could we do that? And his answer was, as much as I'm overburdened by that paperwork, there's none of it that someone else can do because of privacy, because of the medical expertise required for it. And so we've got to find new ways to organize that paperwork and maybe have, you know, physician assistants. Again, I don't know what the model is. I need to listen to the doctors. In fact, I'm going up to one of the CHCs this afternoon or this morning to have some of those conversations.
Ellis, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling in. We can take, we have time for one more call. Let's go north of Belleville to Richard. Good morning.
Good morning, Lord.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. I just wanted to talk about, you were talking about housing and substance abuse, et cetera. I'm in geared to income housing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a great idea without rehabilitation to put people, you know, in to house them. And the reason is because they just carry on the same bad behavior. They're, you know, they set fires at times. They're dealing drugs. They're stoned out of their minds all the time. They're belligerent, et cetera. So I just wanted to see, you know, if you're in agreement with me.
I definitely understand that. And I didn't get to what I was starting to say before, is that when we're dealing with someone who is in addiction crisis, and we deal with them medically, we then have to get them into a treatment program. And now these treatment programs should be 3 months, 6 months, a year, things like mm-hmm. that. But on top of that, coming out the other end of that treatment program, we have to have transitional housing available for them. We have to have educational or job programs available for them so that they can move back into a successful mm-hmm. lifestyle. You know, as you say, if all we're doing is, you know, getting them detoxed for a mm-hmm. few days and then throwing them into common housing, we end up with trouble mm-hmm. in that environment, certainly.
Yeah. Because they just carry the same bad behavior when you house them.
Yeah, we have to give them an opportunity to succeed.
They don't seem to understand they have a problem. They think this is sort of normal behavior.
That's a very individualized situation, and continuing to work with them about their addictions is the right path.
Like one person said, quote unquote, anything you put in your body is nutrition, because they were complaining about people asking what they wanted money for when they were asking for money. And that was his response. Anything you put in your body is nutrition. In other words, alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, it's all nutrition. That's his attitude.
That's an unfortunate case where someone is really misunderstanding the situation.
All right, Richard.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. All right.
Take care.
And thank you, Rick. I know we have a whole bunch of calls, but we just don't have time to get you. You'll have to come back soon and answer some more questions from our listeners. But if you want to speak to Rick directly, you can do so tomorrow.
Absolutely. Come on out to Thurlow. We're going to be over on Harmony Road at the, I'm blanking on the
Jerry Masterson
Center. Thank you. We're going to be there from 4 till 6. As well, I'm out doing public skates and things of that nature. Come on out to see me or come by the offices either in Madoc or in Napanee, and we're happy to talk.
Rick Briz-